Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Shotgun snap to Wilson. Cocks his arm. Throws an arching pass down the near sideline. Leaping attempt. Knocked away.
He caught it.
Oh, and it was caught on the deflection. Caught on the ricochet. Curse at the five. Curse has caught the ball at the five. On a 33-yard deflected completion. It's first and goal, Seattle. Second and goal at the one. The quarterback, Wilson, is in the shotgun formation. Lynch will flank him to his left. Two wide to the near side, one to the far. In the shotgun, there's the snap, it's belt high. Quick throw, it's intercepted at the goal line! It's intercepted by Malcolm Butler! Malcolm Butler is intercepted, Russell Wilson, at the goal line! 20 seconds left!
Well, that was a bizarre ending to the Super Bowl, which was a great football game, where it's just, in my mind, there's no doubt that you watched a coaching staff outthink itself yesterday. I sat back and I thought to myself, okay, you have a timeout, you've got, and I know what the stats say, I know what Lynch's success or lack thereof in that situation has been this year, but you have to, as instinctive as the Seattle coaching staff was at the end of the first half, the lack of instinct at the end of the game in that sequence was a 180 departure from that.
Marshawn Lynch was averaging, what, 3-4 yards a carry? I understand that you want to try and do something that nobody's expecting, but it's second down and you have a timeout. Even if he doesn't get 1 yard, which I don't think there's anybody that watched that game that thinks he's not going to get 1 yard, you still have another play. And secondly, if you do decide to throw the ball, why throw it in the middle of the field?
Actually, on goal to go from the 1 yard line this year, Lynch had 5 carries, minus 1 yard, 1 touchdown. But the instinct tells you that you're having success off the left side and they were getting push and he was getting push and your odds were really good there. I was shocked when they threw it. Not only that, a high traffic throw. That's a high traffic throw through a lot of bodies to make it happen. And Butler made a heck of a play on it. You still would have had 20 seconds left on a Lynch miss run, and that's more than enough time to get third and fourth down in. And third and fourth down probably would have been pass plays, or obviously on fourth down, anything goes, including in a scramble breakdown, the possibility of Russell Wilson scoring. So it was as instinctive as the Seattle coaching staff was at the end of the first half. We're going to do this. This is the package they have in the game, so we're going to counter with this package. Sometimes you think too much. Watch the game. The Seattle coaches weren't watching the game. They were having great success with Lynch off the left side. In fact, Patrick Chung made a game saver on first down. Great, great Super Bowl, though.
Well, except for the very last 20 seconds of it.
Well, for the fight. I mean,
that was ridiculous.
But that's what's happened lately, and I don't like this trend. Now, I know the Patriots have to run a play. Now, I know that. The Patriots have to run a play. And Seattle was then called for offside. My thought was the Patriots... Bill O'Brien told me that when he was... an assistant coach and the coordinator of the Patriots, the first play they put in minicamp and in training camp every year, the very first play they put in was the quarterback sneak. It's the very first play they put in. The Patriots are very, very good at running it. So that's what I'm sure that they were going to run. They didn't tip it, but I was pretty sure that's what they're going to run down there. Seattle jumped it, and, of course, then they were called for offside. But then at this point, now you're in kneel-down mode. What I don't like of late is that we're seeing more and more people play the kneel down like it's a legitimate tackle play. Stop it. It's not. The big thing there is be alert. If they fumble it, jump on it. But you're not jumping on bodies. And that, and I find what we've been seeing over this play to the whistle. I think Greg Schiano started this at Tampa Bay, right?
Yeah.
Absurd. Okay. Grow up.
Well, here's the only guy that really can make a play, and that's the guy lined up on the center. I mean, he's really the only one that can make a play.
Oh, no. If he fumbles the snap, anybody can make a play. That's the only play left, is if they fumble the snap.
But that's what I'm saying. He's the only one that really has any impact on the play.
No, there are four other guys on each side where that ball gets loose, they can make a play on it. So you've got actually seven guys up front. I think you know.
Yeah, but I don't know that you understand what I mean by that. I mean, he's the one. He can actually attack the center and push him into the quarterback. I mean, that's the only real play here to be able to cause a fumble.
No, a bad exchange causes a fumble.
Yeah, but that doesn't have anything to do with the defense. I'm saying the only one that can make a play by the defense is that nose.
The defense, he can't do. No, they can't, because he'd be called for a penalty on it. You'd be called for a penalty on a play like that.
No, I realize you just lost the Super Bowl when you thought you had it won. I get it. But that's no reason for either team to start throwing punches. And explain to me, if anybody throws a punch, why only one player is ejected? There were three guys throwing punches at that point. And by the way, each one had their helmet on. What is the purpose of throwing a punch to a guy that's got a helmet on?
None. Great football game, though. Belichick rolled the dice. Now, we can talk about what Pete Carroll did. Belichick rolled the dice. And that was not using timeouts. He threw it on his defense. He did not call timeouts to give himself a chance at a field goal if Seattle scored a touchdown. Belichick made great adjustments in the game. Great adjustments. The biggest one was the Matthews adjustment. Matthews had not had a catch all year. Matthews makes four catches, 109 yards, touchdown, first half. So what does New England do? They flip-flopped. They put Brandon Browner, because Matthews is a big wideout. They put Brandon Browner, who's 6'3", 6'4", on him. And then flipped Butler in and made Butler the nickel. That was the adjustment that they made, which was huge. And that's what you have to do when you're... It's one thing that is talked about to a point, but not talked about enough. The really good ones are the ones that have the ability that know it's a really big game where everything is dissected, but they have the ability to make sure that the approach is the same mentally as November. And that's big. Where you sit there and you say to yourself, okay, what are they doing? What do I need to adjust to? How do I fix it? Fix it. Instead of getting so caught up, it's a big game. Okay, what's the next play? What are we going to run? Okay, wait a minute. We're having a problem here. How do we fix it? Michael Bennett is killing us. How do we fix it? You're Seattle. All right? Seattle really Atlanta an all-out blitz once in the ballgame. But Jeremy Lane gets hurt. How do we fix it? That was a huge one in the game. How do we fix that? Getting Matthews involved. All right, now I think we finally fixed our downfield pass game. That's a big part of it, is that you've got to look around to be the coolest cat in the house, and you've got to make sure that you're fixing things the same way you are fixing things in October and November. And that's a big part of this. And you can't get overcome. And, you know, and you look at the Patriots. I mean, the margin of victory yesterday in the Patriots. The Patriots have now been in 6 Super Bowls in the Belichick era. They're now 4-2. Yesterday tied the biggest margin in any of the games, 4 points. They lost 21-17 to the Giants. That was the other 4-pointer. But that is a big part of this. The ability to look around. And this is where I thought the Patriots... my brother texted me at one point, and I don't do this that often. I mean, if you listen to the broadcast, when I do a broadcast, you get a gut feeling about something. There will be moments where I will say in the broadcast, it really is important for Penn State to be the next team to score if they want to win this game. As opposed to moments, and I did this in the Pinstripe Bowl, where you just get a sense for the moment. And I remember saying in the Pinstripe Bowl when they were down 21-7, it was very distinct, the next team that scores will win the game. If it had been BC, they would have cruised home. But I felt if Penn State were the next team to score, with the emotion in Yankee Stadium, suddenly that wave would hit, and that wave would have an impact, and it did. Well, my brother texted me at the end of the third quarter, and he said, look, this thing's gone for the Patriots. He said, Lynch, they can't stop. And I texted him back and said, Kevin, next team that scores will win the game. Because that's a moment, just a sense you have about momentum. And I felt very strongly about that. And you know, I mean, all the way through. I mean, the whole thing was the Seahawks played really well. The Patriots played really well. I mean, Brady had the 2 picks, but he threw 4 touchdown passes to 4 different guys. Shane Vereen was great. Julian Edelman played great. I thought Bobby Wagner played a great game yesterday. You know, the Seahawks had to overcome some things. I mean, they lose Lane. They lost Averill to a concussion. It was just a great, great pro football game. Great broadcast, too, till the post-game ceremony, and then that was... Wow. That was... I know he's on the station, but that was... No offense, that was not a shining moment.
And he admits that. He did admit that earlier today, that it was not his best moment. And, of course, you know, he admitted messing up with Gronk there as well and making mention to winning another trophy, and, of course, he wasn't. So I give him credit. You know, he came back and said it was not a great moment.
But he messed up Belichick, too. He shut him down.
And he talked about that, too. He said, I had Belichick going, and all of a sudden he said, I started asking questions and I lost him. So he even admitted to that as well.
Right. Good for him, because I'm sure his employers will be thrilled to hear that.
Well, you will also be happy to know that Madden predicted it correctly. 28-24, correctly predicted the score. Also predicted that the Seahawks would go on a second-half run to take a 24-14 lead before the Patriots came back to win, and predicted that Julian Edelman would catch the game-winning touchdown. Maybe those video games are closer to real life than we think.
Once again, an entire company is worried about drug testing. All right.
Me and Dan Patrick.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car, picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself, and negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word, Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Pretty Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to prettyinsurance.com. They're the best. And the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Dave Paulson, a basketball coach at Bucknell, will be on to explain how a guy that's 3.5 feet inbounds can be out of bounds.
Can't wait to hear that. I can only imagine Doug Birdsong's reaction to that.
No, I listened to it. Doug Birdsong, I just want to tell you, handled it perfectly. Doug did a great job as to how he handled it. It was confusing. He handled it beautifully. I think that what the official said, that he was out of bounds on the baseline, came back inbounds. But all you have to do is establish yourself as in. Well, considering that for 20 feet, literally, Ryan Frazier ran inbounds, he's inbounds. And I mean, obviously, I saw one the other day in the Penn State Illinois game. It was across the court from me. But a dribble handoff ended up being a foul on Penn State in a tie game. You're like going, okay, I know it's a point of emphasis this year, but like, make that point in the first half.
Or make it correctly, because I wasn't even, the way Dick talked, again, it wasn't even a correct well, interpretation.
Well, I don't really have a judgment on it, Kevin, because it happened across the court from us, and I just saw the foul called. I didn't really see it, how much physical contact there was. I think it's very important that as a commentator or an announcer, two things. A, you know the rules. You have to know the rules. Too many people think they know the rules. I'll give you an example. Chris Collinsworth brilliantly yesterday explained roughing versus
running into the kicker.
Running into the kicker. And that Bill Vinovich got the call wrong, which he did. He got the call. Now, you know, it's a 28-24 game. The Patriots won. So that's back in the first quarter. But that's knowing the rules. That's obvious. And we're going to talk to Kevin Kugler here from Westwood in just a second here. I am strongly opinionated when it comes to the Big Ten having a seminar every year where they make the announcers go to a rule seminar so that we know what we're talking about.
Great idea.
Now, Dick and I, we do know what we're talking about. That's because we take time to find out things. We do. And same thing in football. You remember this year when I needed to find out something? I didn't just sit here on this show and spout off. What did I do?
Made a phone call.
I called Bill Carollo and said, Bill, help me here. Give me a checklist as to where I'm right, where I could go wrong, and how I explain it properly. Because you can whine, moan, and complain all you want. To sit there and do it with bad information is unprofessional. giving people the right information, even if it's an explanation that they don't want to hear, but the fact that it's right is really important. The next part is, for example, on that play, it looked like a benign handoff, but it was across the court from me, a couple players still in front of me, and I saw the handoff happen, and the foul was called. I'm not going to jump off the bridge and start, I can't believe they did this, when I didn't really see it. That's unprofessional. So I didn't belabor it. And I've had people say, well, you didn't say too much about it. I said, I didn't say too much about it because I really didn't see it. And that's one of the things about being on the court. There are great things about being on the court broadcasting a game that I like very, very much. But the one thing being on the court that I don't like is that you get occasionally screened.
By the official, by the coach, by anybody.
You know, or if it happens to be in a traffic area by another player.
By another player.
So I saw the handoff happen, whatever, and then I saw the foul called. Well, I'm not going to go crazy over that. You know, only because for the simple reason is that, you know, I don't go crazy on it to begin with, so. All right, let's bring in Kevin Kugler from Big Ten Network Westwood One, who does an outstanding job in the NFL, college basketball, but also has a habit that, you know, when the ego dictates, he just goes out and just takes the other guy's color analyst and uses it for himself.
Is Dick available? I've got a bat mitzvah I need to work on, and I figure he could probably come in and do color commentary for that too. If you don't need him for something else, I'm stealing him for everything else.
You and I had a good laugh about it that day, and we have a good laugh about it now. I told you he'd be great to work with. He's the best.
He was terrific, and you know what? We got a lot of positive feedback. Penn State fans seem to like him, which is nice since he's on your broadcast every time.
Yeah, tell me about it. Believe me, you know who likes him more than anybody else? His play-by-play guy.
Exactly. Yeah, that's not a bad thing.
Nobody likes him more than me. You did a lot of Seahawks games this year. You also had the Patriots from time to time. What were your thoughts on the end, especially when you consider how instinctive Seattle was at the end of the first half with how they played it?
Well, and that's the thing that's hard to grasp from what we saw at the end of that game, because they handled, and normally do, they handled it so well at the end of the first half, and that's, you know, it's kind of been the trademark of Seattle over the last couple of years, Steve. It's been they're a smart team, they're a well coached team, they're usually a well prepared team, and they showed that at the end of the first half. The end of the game was just such an anomaly, really, for Seattle. It was so bizarre, and I think that's why we all had the reaction that we did to the final play call, because it was so surprising and so out of character from what you normally have become accustomed to with Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks, that we were all so aghast because it seemed so obvious to any of us sitting in our living room. Well, you've got Marshawn Lynch. You're going to run the football here. That makes perfect sense. You've got three shots plus a timeout from the one-yard line with Marshawn Lynch. Let's see if you can get that done. And if you can't, you tip your cap to the Patriots and say, you deserve it. You won by stuffing the best running back in the game right now at the one-yard line. Sometimes I think, in the moment, coaches overthink themselves. It surprised me that it was Pete Carroll that did it last night.
You had Seattle Green Bay, right? You had the NFC Championship game.
No, I had the.
You had the AFC.
I saw the Patriots demolish the Colts in
okay.
that one.
So you saw that. You saw that steamroller.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is interesting. When you deal with the Patriots and so forth, and you look at how Belichick doesn't change expression a lot on the sideline. It seems like, for the most part, he's the coolest cat in the building. Fair enough?
More than fair. And I think he is. I said this last week to somebody about these two coaches, and I didn't think I was going to have to eat my own words on this, but I think I do to a certain extent because of what we saw at the end of the game. But I went into this game thinking both of these coaches, there's little that phases them. They've seen everything. They've been a part of everything. They've been in almost every scenario. And I didn't think it would come down to a questionable coaching decision. Yeah, we've seen Bill Belichick make a weird call from time to time. We saw it against the Colts a few years ago. We've seen Pete Carroll make a weird call from time to time, but those were earlier. You assume they've learned from them. These guys are both veteran coaches, and it really surprised me to see Pete Carroll make that strange and puzzling call last night. But when you look at Bill Belichick and you look at a guy who is the picture of control on the sidelines, he's that guy. I know we're all talking about the last play, but what about the job he and his staff did helping this team rally against a really good defense, 10 down with 10 minutes to play in this ball game, and they came back and won the Super Bowl. Nobody'd ever done that before that late, but Bill Belichick's team is able to do so, and I think that's in part because of the coach and what he's been able to accomplish in his tenure with the Patriots.
He rolled the dice a little bit at the end himself, though. He did not use timeouts at the end. He rolled it on whether his defense could stop them. The other part, though, is the in-game adjustment. Matthews, who hadn't caught a pass all year, as you well know on your chart, there was a big goose egg next to his name. Yeah, I don't think he'd even touched the football to the onside kick. Caught four passes and a touchdown. They flipped Browner, a bigger corner, which you saw in the AFC Championship game. Browner's, what, about 6'3", 6'4", Kevin? That makes sense?
Yeah, he's right, right in that range. Yep.
And they took Butler, who made the interception, and they flipped him to nickel. The value of that kind of in-game adjustment that a lot of people wouldn't notice.
No question. And that's what comes from Bill Belichick being the coach he is. Now, I read some reports today that Browner went and said, hey, switch me to the big guy. But there are some coaches who, when you've gotten to that point, are not going to deviate from their plan. No, we're going to stay with what we know. You're doing this. We'll do this. We'll be fine. But Bill Belichick says, all right, yeah, let's do that. That makes sense. We're going to switch you up. You're going to go over there, and you're going to erase him from the game. I mean, when that switch occurred, they lobbed it to him that one time late down the field, couldn't get it to him. That was it. I mean, we saw nothing more from Chris Matthews after bursting onto the scene, making all those plays in the Super Bowl. It was a nice, subtle move that didn't require a whole lot of deviation from the game plan, yet Bill Belichick is willing to make that move because he's just confident enough in what his team is able to do that if they move this guy over, it's not going to make that big of a difference.
Basketball now. The Big Ten has had some great years of late. This appears to be, on paper, a very good year. Penn State will have Maryland coming up on Wednesday night. Your thoughts on what Mark Turgeon has, because I mean, he had five guys transfer out. What kind of team does he have when you look at them?
The biggest pleasant surprise in the Big Ten Conference, because, I mean, this was a team picked seventh in the preseason. They were expected to do nothing this year because of those guys that transferred out. We didn't know that Mello Trimble was going to be what Mello Trimble has turned into. We didn't know this team was going to be able to gel like they have. He's certainly one of the leading candidates for Conference Coach of the Year, not because of anything greater surprise or lacking in other coaches, but because the surprise that has been this Maryland team certainly vaults him into consideration for that role. They're a very balanced team to a certain degree. They're a very smart team. I like watching them play. They don't do a lot of things to beat themselves, and it'll be a big test for Penn State. It's been a big test for everybody who's played Maryland this year. On both sides, men's and women's basketball, Maryland has brought a ton to this conference. In the conference expansion, Maryland coming in has made the Big Ten better in basketball. And after the last couple of years, I didn't know you could make this league better in basketball. But it's a good time for them to come into, Steve, because it is not, as you said, a great Big Ten conference this year. It's a good to very good at times conference. Maryland probably makes it that very good conference with their presence in the league.
Obviously, young players can quickly come and go in the college game. And we watched Duke upset Virginia the other night. A lot of people think Okafor is playing his 1 year at Duke, as an example. When you look at some of the younger players in this league, Russell at Ohio State, Blackman at Indiana, Trimble at Maryland, and, of course, I'm leaving a couple of guys out. What strikes you about some of the younger players in the Big Ten?
They're not what I would consider most of them anyway. Russell may be the exception to this comment, but the younger players in this league, to me, are not the guys that I look at and say, oh, well, for sure, they're all gone after a year. You know, you don't look at a ton of these guys, and you mentioned Blackman. I don't look at Blackman and say, oh, yep, he's a one-and-done kind of guy. He's an excellent freshman player in this conference. But I don't look at him and say, oh, he's probably going to be gone at the end of this year. D'Angelo Russell maybe is the exception to that comment. But the rest of the freshmen in this league, I think our guys, we're going to get the chance to get to know over the next year or two. And I think that's good for the league. I mean, the league needs to have name talent grow in this league for it to continue to be the league that it's become in college basketball. And I look at these guys across the board and I say, these are guys who are going to stick around for another year or two, and we're going to get the chance to see these kids grow up and their teams grow up around them. And so when you have a year like this where it's not great but it's very good, that gives you hope that next year again becomes great in this league, because all these kids are going to grow up, and oh, by the way, they're going to bring in new freshmen all across the league next year as well. So I think it bodes well for the future, the kind of talent that these kids are this year.
Wisconsin had the stumble against Rutgers when Frank Kaminsky couldn't play, and then Trey Jackson ended up breaking a bone in his foot, and Jackson's still out. Kaminsky's obviously back. It seems nationally, for the moment, very quietly, Wisconsin is rounding into the kind of team a lot of people thought they would be. Your thoughts on them, and also the ability, Kevin, Kaminsky being inside out, how difficult a guard is this guy?
Oh, well, how many times have we seen a guy with his skill set, and that it just creates so much havoc with a coach in a game plan? Because who do you match up with him? If you put a big on him, that's great on the inside, but is he going to be able to defend him from the outside in? Probably not. And if you put a smaller guy on him, he's going to go right into the block and dominate that guy. He's such a tough matchup, and he's playing at a higher level this year than he was last year. And I thought he was awfully good last year, taking that team as far as they went in the NCAA tournament. I just think with what Bronson Koenig has done, stepping in for Trayvon Jackson, I mean, this guy is certainly no slouch to begin with, but not a lot of people knew of him. Well, they've not missed a step with Koenig stepping into that role as the de facto point guard for this Wisconsin team that is loaded with talent, has the depth. The growth of Nigel Hayes has made this team so strong this year. And, of course, Kaminsky and what he does from a matchup standpoint, it seems like in this year in the Big Ten, we're seeing something that we haven't seen for a year or two, and that's a clear-cut top team in the conference.
Right.
To me, Wisconsin is the clear-cut top team in this league.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any question about that. I think what Bo does, he brilliantly gets an eight-man rotation. He sticks with it. Then he had a little problem here, obviously, by getting Jackson hurt. But it seems like he just keeps – and Nigel Hayes, Decker's really good. I think Decker's an NBA player. I don't know what you think. I think he's an NBA player. Nigel Hayes is just better than he was last year.
Well, and Nigel Hayes has developed this 15-foot, this mid-range jumper that I think he's had, but it's obvious he spent a lot of time in the offseason working on this mid-range jumper, because he's now a guy who will step in about 3 feet from inside the three-point arc in the corner. And I don't know if I've seen him miss one of those shots this year. I'm sure he has. I just haven't seen it. This is a team that has balanced all the way around. And how good are they going to be when Trayvon Jackson comes back?
Right.
You're going to add that caliber of a player to a team that has developed now Bronson Koenig and his confidence. It's a scary team in the postseason. And I know this will sound like the homer guy that I am, but they're a team that I think can cause Kentucky some problems when they get into the NCAA tournament if they happen to match up. I think they have difficult matchups for Kentucky at times. I know Kentucky is deep, and I know they're the unanimous number one again in the polls this week, but there are a couple of teams in college basketball that I think could give Kentucky problems in a one-game tournament setting. And I think Wisconsin's one of those because of some of the matchups that we've talked about and the fact that they run a system that every one of those guys knows extremely well. And in college basketball, when you have veteran, talented guys who run a good system, that puts you ahead of a lot of teams.
Well, with Jackson back, the one thing I would change with them, if I were to him, Bo knows like this much about basketball, and I know this little about basketball, but I thought they got a little too comfortable at the end of games last year as Jackson is the number one option. And I think you've got a couple of other guys that might be a better one.
Well, and you know what's interesting? That may change. I don't know how much this will change when he comes back, but I'm going to be interested to see the split of the minutes with Jackson and Koenig.
Right.
It's not like Koenig has played poorly, and he's been a decent scorer for them in this role as well. It'll be a real interesting coaching job to see how Bo Ryan juggles the minutes, and if there is a little lessening of the role of Trayvon Jackson because of the growth of Bronson Koenig during this stretch. He'll certainly utilize Trayvon Jackson, and I would imagine he'll move back into a starting role. But I don't think Bronson Koenig goes all of a sudden to a 15-minute-a-night guy. I think that's a guy that's earned himself equal numbers and equal minutes with Trayvon Jackson.
Kevin, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Kevin Kugler from Westwood One Big Ten Network. Appreciate the time he carved out for us today. Dave Paulson coming up after the top of the hour. Back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, coming up next hour, Dave Paulson, head basketball coach at Bucknell. We'll talk about a rather bizarre officiating move in his game, which was confusing to watch, and I watched it three or four times yesterday. And also Jerome Bettis getting into the Hall of Fame. He will headline the class going into Canton. I know, a big moment for you.
That was the best moment of Saturday. I mean, the entire day, that was the best moment.
We're going to talk about it in the final half hour.
No, nothing you can say is going to take that away. Nothing.
It has nothing to do with that. It's just a,
I realize that this was probably a Hall of Fame.
There is no absolute doubt that Jerome Bettis is a Hall of Fame National Football League player. Hall of Fame player, no doubt. Durability, longevity, consistency. But I think his election should open the door for other people that have much better numbers.